It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The U.S. Senate is beginning debate on the Iran nuclear agreement with a vote to be held no later than September 17th, 1 week from tomorrow. Democrats, including Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey, have now given President Obama the votes he needs to prevent the Senate from passing a measure disapproving of the Iran nuclear deal. The agreement reached between Iran and six world powers, including the United States, would ease sanctions on Iran in exchange for curbs on the country's nuclear program. I'm joined now by phone from Washington by Senator Bob Casey. Senator Casey, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, good to be with you. Thank you.
How difficult was it for you to arrive at your decision, and what information did you have to sift through in order to arrive at the conclusion that this heavily criticized agreement is a good one for the country and the world?
At first, it was a very difficult decision, among the most, if not the most difficult decision I've made about one particular vote on an issue of great complexity and consequence. So it took an awful lot of work. The way I did it is I think the right way to approach it, which is to give it the time and the consideration in the review that I did. And that takes a while, and I was fortunate that we had the better part of 60 days as opposed to 30, because it gave me more time to talk to more experts, to do more reading, to do more thinking. So I'm a great believer that sometimes time can be your friend on something like this, and it certainly I needed the time, because it's not an easy matter in and of itself, the agreement, it's what you have to weigh in addition to the four corners of the agreement, which is even more complicated. So it's worthy of that kind of work and that kind of review, because it's a critically important issue for our security, for the security of Israel, and the security of the region, the Middle East.
And it's interesting to hear you say that this was one of the most difficult decisions that you have had to make. And so I'm curious what you looked at, whom you spoke with, in order to be convinced that this is the way that the country should proceed, and that this is something that you would be willing to stake your reputation as a senator on to back.
Yes, I mean, part of what I had as a foundation is 6.5 years on the Foreign Relations Committee, and a little more than four of those years as the chairman of a subcommittee that had under its jurisdiction, among some 32 countries, Iran and other countries in the Middle East. So that helped enormously to have that foundation. You obviously bring your own philosophy to these questions about how to stop a country like the regime in Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. What weighed heavily on me was the basic fact that they have only 2 to 3 months between the time they would decide to gather enough fissile material and the time they would get it. That's not a long time, and if you're going to stop them, you have to stop them now. You have to stop them 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15, 20, whatever the number of years it is. We have to stop them every time. So that was a significant consideration. And in order to arrive at that determination, in addition to my own work and my own experience, you want to consult with and closely examine the opinions of folks who are experts in the field, people who know a lot about diplomacy, know a lot about Iran itself and its intentions, know a lot about the nuclear fuel cycle and the nuclear weapons as a separate issue. So a lot of disciplines and expertise you want to examine, in addition to reading everything you can about the issue and considering both sides. Met with a lot of constituents, probably met with more constituents against than for, and sometimes that's just the nature of it. When someone opposes something, they tend to be more active and more determined. But that took weeks and weeks and weeks of work, and then I finally, to gather it all together, felt that I couldn't just delegate it. So I actually started writing and putting my own thoughts on paper and quoting some of these experts that I consulted to get a position on paper and to work that through so that I could have a substantial statement, not a couple of paragraphs.
One of the things, Senator Casey, that opponents of this contend is that Iran will continue to try to cheat. How does this prevent that? How good is a deal like this if the Iranians have no intention of giving up their attempts to build a nuclear weapon, as many contend they will?
Well, first of all, I built into my assumption, I didn't want to assume any kind of rosy scenario, because I think that's risky, and especially with a regime like Iran, it's risky because their past behavior, their past activities, leads me to conclude that we should not trust them now, and we should not trust them ever, unless and until they would undergo a fairly substantial or radical change. But I'm not assuming that they will. I'm assuming we're not going to be able to trust them. You can see from my long statement that in the first assumption, where I say, quote, we have to prepare for the possibility that the Iranian regime may violate the agreement and may even engage in activity constituting significant noncompliance with the agreement. They were my words, and I meant every word of them, meaning that this is not an agreement based upon trust. We don't trust them, nor should we right now. It's an agreement based upon verification, the toughest verification ever in the history of arms control negotiations. They're not my words. A lot of experts have said that. So you have to verify, and that's why you have to bring together the toughest inspections and verification and use our intelligence that our intelligence agencies can gather, as well as intelligence from other countries, to hold Iran accountable to this agreement. Because, Paul, you know from reviewing it, the commitment that Iran has made in the agreement is to never, ever have a nuclear weapon. That's not qualified in any way. That is an absolute promise, and that's exactly what they say in the agreement. We have to assume, I'm going to assume, that the only way that promise will be fulfilled is if we hold them accountable every single step of the way. And so I believe it's important to verify and to check and to inspect and re-inspect and to hold this coalition of countries together across the world, the most significant coalition ever to come together on an arms agreement or a nuclear weapons agreement, and to make sure that we're all working in concert together, just like we work together in an unprecedented fashion to have sanctions put in place. So that's the scenario that I believe is part of the consideration of the agreement.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Pennsylvania U.S. Senator Bob Casey about the Iran nuclear agreement, which he supports. The Senate is going to begin debating that and will vote no later than September 17th. Senator Casey, one of the things that concerns people is that, and as you said, this is not an agreement that is built on trust. People, Americans, don't trust the Iranians, and there's, of course, a long history there. There's the Iran hostage crisis. There's all of that baggage that comes to the table with something like this. So assuming that we cannot trust the Iranians, then are you convinced that the mechanisms are in place, that the safeguards are there, so that if they were to try to start doing something, that we would catch them in the act, something that violates the agreement?
Yeah, I think the verification provisions are substantial. And as I said, we've never seen this kind of structure put in place. And one of the folks that I relied upon to evaluate various aspects of the agreement based upon his own experience in his work and his recent writing on the agreement, Robert Einhorn. He's at the Brookings Institution, but he also has been in the field of nonproliferation and was a State Department advisor on nonproliferation proliferation and arms control. He's among many experts that I consulted with or studied. And he said, and I'm quoting from the statement here, this is Robert Einhorn saying, the agreement ensures high confidence in the ability to detect noncompliance at declared facilities because of the use of advanced verification technologies. And he goes on from there. So this isn't just a couple of guys with flashlights walking around looking for things. This is the kind of technology and the kind of verification that we haven't seen before. Now, that verification and inspection that will be done by the so-called IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, we have to make sure that they have the best technology now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15, 20, wherever it takes. And that means we should do our part, as other countries have to do, to make sure the IAEA has the funding they need. And we have to check. And there may be times, Paul, where our intelligence gathers information that creates suspicion that would lead to us taking action on our own. And it doesn't mean we have to wait for other countries. We can take action unilaterally to hold Iran accountable. We have to do that sometimes.
What should the action be?
Well, that would depend upon what the violation is, and I think some of that has to be implemented over time, where you create what Dennis Ross, who was very much concerned about building up our deterrence against Iran. He's one of the experts on Iran and the country. In other words, one of the things he spoke to was creating the condition or the environment for no tolerance. And the only way you can do that is by practice, meaning if Iran violates the agreement in a minor way, there has to be a consequence. The consequence might be commensurate or equal to the degree of violation, but there has to be a consequence. If they violate it in a more significant way, there has to be a consequence that's specific. Now, one of the ways that you can hold them accountable is by the reimposition of sanctions. And that's one way that you would have to hold them accountable if they had what the lawyers might call a significant noncompliance, something substantial. But, Paul, I have to say this as well. The ultimate action by Iran, if this were to ever happen, I hope it doesn't, but we have to almost assume it will or prepare ourselves for it, where they take an action which leads to breakout, meaning they have somehow developed enough fissile material for a nuclear weapon. At that point, what has to be on the one of our major options, if not the only option, because we've exhausted every other option, is an airstrike or a military attack on Iran. The only good news there, and we never want to talk about those circumstances, but the only good news is Iran knows and the world knows that the United States has the weapon that can take out their nuclear weapons program. We have, fortunately, the kind of ultimate deterrence, which is basically a 30,000-pound bomb that no other country has. So that's the ultimate backstop or fortification for the agreement. But along the way, we can't wait. We can't just let them violate over time and hope that they will come into compliance. If they violate, there has to be a consequence, I believe, for each and every infraction.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee, announced earlier this week that she is supporting the nuclear agreement with Iran. It was a very difficult decision for her. She is Jewish. She is concerned about what may happen to Israel, as are certainly other members of Congress. And she says that she's supporting this, but she still has concerns. Senator, in spite of all the work that you've done, the homework, the research, and the background material that you've gathered, do you still have concerns about this?
I do. There's no question. When you're dealing with a regime like this, you You have to have some concerns. No arms control negotiator, no president, no member of Congress in the history of our country could ever stand up and say, this agreement, I guarantee that this agreement will work out perfectly every time. There's no way you can make that. That's no human being can do that. So for some to say that, you know, absent perfection and an absolute guarantee you can't vote for it is really ridiculous. We enter into agreements and make determinations all the time that involve our national security where there is risk. Sometimes it's limited risk, but you also have to consider what's the alternative. And from what I heard from people who are proposing alternatives, I was never close to being persuaded that any of those alternatives were better than having a tough deal in place that you can enforce and verify and frankly respond if there's a problem. But Paul, on a lot of days we're going to have a split screen, and this is how complicated the world is. I wish the world was simpler, but it's not. That we're going to be, if the deal, the agreement goes forward, I think it will, we're going to be implementing the agreement. We're going to be checking and verifying and holding Iran accountable. And they might be very, very compliant on most days, if not every day. But on the other side of the screen, we're going to be fighting them in the Middle East in one way or another. We're going to be countering their aggression. Just like we counter them now, we're going to have to do an even better job on that. And the Gulf countries are going to have to do a better job. And every country in the region that has concerns about Iran is going to have to counter that aggression. But that we can do both at the same time. We can have an agreement with them and hold them accountable and make sure that works. And at the same time, hit them hard and use our not just existing sanctions, but sanctions that will stay in effect on terrorism, sanctions on weapons of mass destruction, sanctions that designate individuals within the Iranian government, those sanctions are still in place. And maybe one of the more significant sanctions that people forget about is after this agreement's in place, we're not doing business with Iran. We're not trading with Iran. Our business people cannot do business with Iran. We won't have an economic relationship with Iran. We're still going to be, if not at war, we're going to be in a very, very tense and adversarial relationship with Iran. That will not change with the agreement. But you have to be, if you want to stop a nuclear weapon, you have to be able to do two things at once. You have to counter them as well as hold them to this agreement aggressively so they do not develop a nuclear weapon. And a lot of the folks against the agreement have no answer for that. I'm still waiting for someone to present to me, and they won't be able to because there is no alternative here, to present to me an alternative that says, I have an alternative that can stop the nuclear weapons program, that can reduce all the uranium enrichment capability that they have, like this agreement does, can take off the table the plutonium reprocessing pathway, which, as the New York Times points out today, is the most likely pathway and the more potent pathway. This agreement takes that right off the table, in addition to a lot of other features of this agreement that are strong. But we're going to have to, we're going to have a tough assignment here, but it's a lot tougher assignment when you have no deal, and then they can race to a bomb, and then they have a nuclear weapon staring at us, and the same people that are criticizing the deal might be saying, okay, now we have to attack them, and attack them when we're not necessarily prepared to attack them, or attack them when we don't have the kind of unity we had on sanctions. So if I had to boil this down to four words, it would be this. Implement well, or maybe it's five words, implement well, enforce. Thirdly is to counter them in the region, and fourth is to deter. Remind them over and over again that we can take out their nuclear program for sure. We know we have that weapon. We know it's capable of that. But we want to make sure that we exhaust every possibility before we have to make that determination and not act like some who in Washington tough talk, but they don't have a solution. The question for those against the deal is, how do you stop the bomb right now? Right now, not 15 years from now, not 10 years. How do you stop the bomb right now?
Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey joining us from Washington, talking about why he supports the Iran nuclear agreement. Senator Casey, as always, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Paul, thank you.
We invited Republican Senator Pat Toomey, who is opposed to the Iran nuclear agreement, to join us as part of this conversation. Senator Toomey declined our offer. Coming up, the nonprofit housing organization Hearth is celebrating its 20th anniversary. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.